If I'm going to go see my cardiologist, I can safely assume that this is somebody who's going to treat my heart and heart condition. When you walk into something called a men's health clinic, I don't really know what I'm going to be treated for. So in the community, what I would say is when we talk about men's health clinics, what we're talking about is erectile dysfunction, testosterone replacement, really to be the two main things.
Yeah.
They may delve into other things such as, you know, cardiovascular disease, yeah, diabetes management. But as I said, the term is very loosely applied to a variety of clinics.
This is the Man Up Podcast, Doctor's Guide to Men's Health. Each week on our podcast, we interview the top specialists of the field on various topics in men's health. You have questions that you are too afraid to ask? We have the answers. This week, our episode is titled, Is It Possible to Restore My Penis? I'm Dr. Kevin Chu, and I'm joined as always with my co-host, Dr. Justin Dubin. Justin, what's good?
Not much. My mic is not working. We were trying to figure that out. It's really annoying me, but it is what it is.
Justin, you always got the technical issues. Huh?
My laptop sucks. My mic somehow doesn't work half the time. I don't really know what's going on. It's very frustrating. But I went with one of my colleagues today. It was he had an event where we listened to opera, local Miami singers. And it was actually awesome. It was really, really sick.
Do you usually listen to opera? Is that like something that you
absolutely
kind of
you have
for?
No idea? No. I think you knew the answer to that. But you know, when I was in Milan and Moda and I did go to Luciano Pavarotti's house, and it was pretty cool. So I did listen to some opera recently, and I was listening to it on Spotify. It's good music. Oh. It's good. Highly recommend it.
So like, you know, it's kind of like always like centered around a story, right? That's kind of like how an opera thing kind of works, right? Or correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're 100% right. It's literally a story. It's like a play, yeah, but opera. I guess they just are singing the whole time in Italian. But that's what I've been up to. I'm getting ready to go to AUA next week. This will be airing the Monday of AUA.
That's right.
So I'm excited. The AUA, for people who don't know what that is, the American Urological Association, it's the national annual conference. This year it's going to be held in Chicago. So I'll be going to Chicago, give a talk.
It's when all the dick doctors get together in one city to talk about dicks.
It's exactly what it is. I will miss Kevin though. And Kevin cannot make it, but he's got other more important things to worry about. But what is cool is, you know, we're bringing that up because the last time we were together, we recorded this episode at SMSNA. We're going to go back in time to do this episode because we thought it was relevant now, more than ever, because, we talk about a specific study and Kevin's going to highlight it in a second about some of these restorative therapies and whether there's data, backing, you know, a lot of the things that we're going to talk about and ways to improve your erection and actually regenerate your erection and the tissue and the physiology behind it. So, right. And Dr. Masterson, who joins us, he's been on the episode before. He's the assistant professor of urology at Miami, and he's a good friend of ours. But and we're highlighting these restorative therapies, which have become very, very popular. Now, Kevin, can you kind of just explain to our listeners what restorative therapy is in general and then like what the newest paper really shows?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the reason why we're kind of bringing this episode on at the same time when, you know, a big conference is being held is because, you know, at these conferences, you always talk about the future, right? You're talking about technology. How can we improve, you know, the treatments that we give our patients? And so restorative therapies, as Justin alluded to, you know, really covers three things in the realm of erectile dysfunction, right? You have shockwave therapy, which I'm sure you've heard on the radio. There's also PRP or platelet-rich plasma, which are injections that you're taking your own blood and kind of like introducing it back into the body, and also stem cell treatment. And so we'll kind of go over that in the episode. We'll kind of really dig into it, talk about each one and how they work. Just kind of as an update, as we'll talk about in the episode is, you know, recent research from the University of Miami has kind of come out kind of giving us an update on the efficacy of platelet-rich plasma in the community and its efficacy for erectile dysfunction. And it's basically shown that there's really no difference seen between PRP injections in the terms of improvement of erectile dysfunction as versus just like a placebo or normal saline. So really no change. But to highlight to our listeners, there is another big study, you know, randomized controlled trial study that was out from Greece that showed the opposite. So, you know, what we really gather from this is that, you know, there's still more research that needs to be known whether this works. And we really talk about that in this episode, right, Justin?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a really good point. And we talk about the study that is out of University of Miami, and Dr. Masterson goes into a little bit more detail about the study, but he did not have the results at the time. And so remember, now we were just updating you in the beginning of this episode with the results, but there was no significant difference between the PRP and the placebo. But as Kevin said, there was another study out in Greece that showed that there was a potential benefit. So, you know, these things are new. These studies are new. These things, because they are not generally backed by literature yet, are not backed by the AUA, our Urology Association. And because of that, they're often not covered by insurance, and they are cash.
I would say probably almost all the time.
Not covered by insurance.
And they are
cash. And there are some important things that you have to understand when listening to this episode, and that being one of them. But you also have to understand that whenever you're dealing with things that are cash, there's always potential people that are going to take advantage of that. Now, we go into very strict detail, specific details of, you know, shockwave versus, you know, acoustic wave. And we talk about differences there, which are very, very important in determining restorative therapies. But in general, the goal of restorative therapies is to not only just, it's not a Band-Aid to improve your erection. Yeah. It's actually going to the heart of the problem and creating new vasculature, creating new tissue, and improving the blood flow to your penis, and potentially taking you off medications and improving your erections from like within.
Which is kind of what we should do in medicine, right? In medicine, we shouldn't really have Band-Aids. We should be seeking cures, right? And erectile dysfunction is a disease process. And so, you know, I think it's important that we're looking in these areas, but it's so important what you highlighted that, you know, the literature there is, you know, you got to kind of see it and hear it from, which we'll talk about in this episode, like, you know, which ones are actually have shown that they work, which ones for which patients. And it's not as like easy as like a, you know, kind of black and white kind of argument, you know. There's a little bit nuance into it, and we'll kind of get on to that in the episode. So
I think that's about it. What I think, like you just said, some of this stuff works, some of it we don't know if it works, some of it we know it definitely doesn't work, but there is a lot of gray in that line, because patient selection and it is also key for even the ones that we know work or we think work. Before you go and spend money on these things, talk to your local urologist, talk to your local healthcare providers, because they are not cheap. But with that, I hope you guys enjoy the episode. As always, we really are appreciating more reviews on iTunes, on Spotify, comment. I know that there was one comment, we read them all, that, you know, ways to contact us. We don't have a man up email, but you can reach out to us on our socials. You can reach out to us that way on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, you name it. So, you know, that's always an easy way to get to us. And our emails are also available on our Instagram accounts as well. So you can always reach out to us that way. It's just an extra email to manage, and it's kind of a pain in the ass, to be honest with you. I think Kevin agrees.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah. If you do have questions, you know, feel free to reach out. But other than that, thanks for listening. Enjoy this episode. And
Before we go, Justin, before we jump into the episode, so we have it on tape. Who do you think are going to come out of the NBA Finals winning the championship? Before we jump into the episode.
Wow. Are you going to give me – you want me to do the finals and then –
Just who you think is going to reach all the way to the end?
I didn't see, is Giannis playing again?
I actually don't know. They're playing right now, right? But I saw that they were up. So,
but I mean, if Giannis is okay, then it's going to be the Celtics. I'm sorry. I think the Celtics, unfortunately, the Celtics are really good coming out of the East.
They look like a polished team. I completely agree with
you,
man.
The West is a complete crapshoot because
free for all.
It's, I mean, I'm all about the beam. I want the beam, but I don't.
Sacramento Kings.
I love beam me up, man. But I think it could even be the Lakers. I would hate that, but you know, it's possible.
I would hate that, but I actually think think LeBron's going to put together. It's possible some sort of magic.
The Nuggets could do it. Out of the West, I really don't know, but I'm gonna. It could be the Suns. Like I thought the Suns weren't going to be good, and now it could be the Suns. I'm just going to go with Sacramento just because I don't think it's going to happen, but I just want it to happen. So I would say Sac versus the Celtics. I think the Celtics are probably the most complete team in the NBA right now. So I'm going to go with the Celtics to win it all. And I'm not a Boston guy. I'm not rooting for them.
Clearly.
Heat culture, Knicks culture. But what do you have?
I got Celtics coming out of the East, and then I think the Lakers unfortunately will put together something, and the NBA will have their, you know, Lakers Celtics marquee matchup. You know, that's what they want. Yeah, so we'll see what happens.
All right, it's on the record. It's on the record.
All right. Enjoy the episode, guys.
Enjoy the episode.
As doctors, you can usually find us in scrubs, but when we're done, we still want to wind down in nice, comfortable pair of clothing.
Luckily, we found Cozy Earth loungewear designed with soft, durable, temperature-regulating bamboo viscose. It is the most comfortable clothing we have ever worn.
The matching men's joggers with the pullover crew have become our go-to outfits for travel.
We love Cozy Earth so much that we've teamed up for an exclusive offer for our listeners. That's right. You get up to 35% off the entire site when you use the code MANUP.
So if you're like us and want comfortable, stylish clothing, check out Cozy Earth and use our promo code MANUP.
All right, so we are joined by Dr. Thomas Masterson, one of our good friends, and who joined us earlier in the podcast before in one of the earlier episodes. So,
yeah.
Dr. Masterson, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And this time I'm dressed a little bit more appropriately, now that I know we're recording video.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
That was a little...
That was an early episode where we were, you know, just getting a feel for everything.
Yeah, it was you know, mid-pandemic, we're all just like at home. I was like, sure, I'm just going to throw on a hoodie and a hat. Thank God I was repping the U.
Exactly, you were repping the U. It was on brand. It was totally on brand. So.
Wait, so how about for some of our, you know, new listeners... Dr. Masterson, why don't you give a little introduction about yourself?
Sure. So my name is Dr. Tom Masterson. I'm a reproductive urologist trained in sexual medicine, infertility, and microsurgery. I'm working at the University of Miami as well as the Miami VA Medical Center. And I know both of these gentlemen from residency, and we are good friends and keep in touch. And they have a very successful podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we love having Tom on. We've obviously trained with Tom. He's also been a teacher to us also.
Absolutely.
As an attending, and it's been really awesome and to be working with him and have him on again. So, Kevin, start us off. Like, what are we going to talk about here?
So, I think one of the things that, you know, we're here at Sexual Medicine Society of North America, SMSNA. We're bringing this live, and you know, I think one of the things that, you know, the sentiment is that it seems like men's health clinics are really on the rise. You know, we're starting to see them pop up everywhere in the community. So before we jump in and talk about restorative therapies, you know, what's your take, Dr. Masterson, on men's health clinics?
Yeah, so men's health clinics are somewhat hard to define. If I'm going to go see my cardiologist, I can safely assume that this is somebody who's going to treat my heart and heart conditions.
Right.
When you walk into something called a men's health clinic, I don't really know what I'm going to be treated for. But I would say in the
It's a really good point.
So in the community, what I would say is when we talk about men health clinics, what we're talking about is erectile dysfunction, testosterone replacement, really to be the two main things.
Yeah.
They may delve into other things such as, you know, cardiovascular disease, diabetes management. But as I said, the term is very loosely applied to a variety of clinics.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting point, and I think that issue is inherently a big problem, right? Because, like, you know, people are going to these places that are men's health clinics, and sometimes they go in expecting one thing and maybe they're told they have something else. And sometimes there's not as much guidance in these areas and they're throwing something to you. And this is not all of them, but you know, in Florida, we do see a lot of these things, and we've all seen here, training here, practicing here. You know, there's a lot of places out there that are called men's health clinics, and what they're doing is kind of just giving you a potential solution without giving you an explanation or you know, medical reason why you have these things, not telling you the risks of medications, not telling you, you know, all these things. And you have to be careful. I think my thing is, like, men's health is exactly what Tom said. There's a lot of things you can consider men's health, but a lot of this stuff is testosterone, ED, and those are the things that a lot of guys worry about. But you got to ask yourself the question, who am I talking to? What am I trying to do here? What are my goals? You know, you can't just go into a place and, you know, just be like, I'm showing up, it's a men's health clinic. And sometimes that happens, right? And then you're told what to do without really a good explanation. So I think it you have to set an expectation for what you want to get out of an experience, and then kind of ask, like, why am I doing this? Who's telling me what I'm going to be doing, and what's their background? You know?
What I was going to say is, I don't think a men's health clinic is a bad
thing. No, it's not.
And I do want to say that, because I may sound like I'm talking negatively about them, but you know, you do want to figure out, you know, what is your goal? What are they going to be treating you with? Research who's treating you.
Yeah.
Find out what therapies they are recommending. Always ask up front the cost of these therapies.
Yes.
And really, you know, do a little bit of research before just diving head in.
I think, you know, there's going to be an episode that we release where we sit with Dr. Jamin Brombat and we really talk a lot about this stuff. And I think the important thing is that, look, it's not a blanket statement. We're not saying here, like, hey, look, men's health clinics, they're, you know, all bad or they're all good. We're not saying that. It's just that it's important for you as a listener or, you know, potential patient that you really do your research and know what you're getting yourself into. And as long as you have those full disclosures, I'm not here to really make you or force you and say you can't do that.
Right.
You absolutely can do whatever you want. Just make sure you understand that, you know, you got to do research. So
I totally agree. And I think that's an excellent point. So let's, you know, get back into this topic that we've bringing Dr. Masterson in today for restorative therapy.
This viral clip.
We recorded an earlier episode earlier today, and we were asked, Kevin and I, you know, what the future of men's health is looking at. And Kevin, you know, has obviously done a lot of research in this field with you and others that we know here. And, you know, he mentioned restorative therapies. So for restorative therapies, you know, can you first kind of give us a description of what we're talking about when we're talking about restorative therapy. So let's start there.
Sure. So a restorative therapy is any therapy that's mechanism of action either does or hypothetically causes the body to heal itself. So when we talk about other treatments, primarily in erectile dysfunction, you know, medications are kind of treating the symptom, but they're not fixing the problem. You're always going to have to take the medication to get an erection. With a restorative therapy, you're hoping that the treatment will actually fix the underlying problem and that you won't need anything in addition, you know, additionally, and that you would have recovery of your normal erections. So the broad categories that are, you know, the most researched and probably the most searched are shockwave therapy, platelet-rich plasma, and stem cell therapy.
So you bring up a really good point. So, you know, we're not trying to, you know, so-called mask the symptoms with, like, you know, medication, all that stuff. We're trying to restore it. That's the goal of these therapies. So break it down. How is shockwave therapy supposed to restore, you know, erectile tissue or dysfunction?
Sure. So we'll circle back to something we talked about the last episode, which is, you know, the five things required for an erection. So this is blood flow, functioning nerves, testosterone levels, relaxation, and stimulation. The restorative therapies, we think, are really working on those first two. This is the blood flow and nerves. Shockwave, it works is it's a high-energy wave delivered over a short amount of time, and that energy can penetrate tissue. That energy then causes micro damage, and that damage then recruits your innate immune system to really heal what's happening. So we think, and it's been at least shown in rats, that when you expose a part of the body to shockwave, it really recruits in cytokines, growth factors, things that are involved in what's called neoangiogenesis, or development of new blood vessels, and possibly even development of new peripheral nerves. So that's kind of how we think shockwave works.
That was a wonderful description, yeah. By the way. That was really awesome. And I think that you bring up, you explain the mechanism, and I think the next question really is, like, can you explain the different kinds of shockwaves out there? Because obviously this is the important part, because that mechanism only works if you're using the right shockwave, correct?
Yes. So not all sound waves are shockwaves, and vice versa. Not all shockwaves are a sound wave. So the two broad categories that you may stumble upon in doing your own reading are radio waves, which really are just sound waves. And they do carry energy, but if you were to plot them out, you see a very kind of low peak energy,
right,
over a fairly long time period. And that really doesn't generate any energy to penetrate tissue. A shock wave, you'll see this very high peak intensity over, you know, you're talking millionths of a second. And that's actually what is then transferred. You know, in urology, shockwaves for years were used to break apart kidney stones.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're talking about, is that kind of energy. You couldn't just, you know, put a bunch of, you know, subwoofers around your body and break up your shockwave.
Or that could be a next study. That's our next study.
Although probably no one's looked. but there was at least a study that came out in JSM comparing radial waves in something that was called Gaines wave. It was very popular, at least down here in South Florida. And compared Gaines wave to placebo, and there was no difference. So what that's telling us is that it's as good or no worse than placebo, which means you're not actually treating somebody with anything. So what we're talking about with shockwave is not these radio waves. Mm. We're talking actual shockwaves. So you may be asking yourself, okay, doc, I went to my men's health clinic. They're telling me, oh, I'm going to treat you with shockwave. So as an informed consumer, you say, hey, what machine are you using?
Exactly.
You can look up those machines on the FDA website. If they are not approved under what's called a 510K and put as a class 2 device, then this is not a shockwave machine. This is something else. Could be a radio wave, could be a pressure wave, but it's not a shockwave. So you as a consumer can look these things up. Now, a word of caution. None of these shockwave devices are approved for the treatment of erectile dysfunction, at least not in the United States. So when you look them up, you'd be like, oh my gosh, this one is for plantar fasciitis. Well, the truth is that's what we're using. We're using devices approved for other indications in the clinic for erectile dysfunction.
So they're essentially used off-label at the moment.
Correct. This is completely off-label use. Again, in the United States, there are no shockwave devices approved for erectile dysfunction. That is not to say that in other countries there aren't, but at least in the United States there are not.
But they're offered though. They're offered off label, and so it's important for the listeners that, you know, just like Dr. Masterson said, you're looking really for a class 2 device, and that's really what separates these, you know, linear or focused shockwaves versus the radio shockwaves, which can typically be found as class 1, I believe, right?
Or some would even argue unclassified.
Unclassified, okay.
No, both of you guys have done extensive research in this, so I think that our listeners are getting a really great insight into, you know, some really smart people who know the data almost better than anyone really out there. I'm going to say,
I think
all you're saying is very important. Why? Because it's not guideline-based, it's not in our guidelines, it is a cash-based thing, right? So if you are going to do these things, and we've all talked with patients, make sure you're doing your research, because you may be paying for something that we know is not going to help you versus something that you're going to pay for something that potentially may, there is some data to support that it may help you. Now, I think that the next step in shockwave that's very important for us to understand is, you know, it's not really for everyone still. Like, who, if someone was interested in something and paying for shockwave, we know the right device now, who is a good candidate for something like shockwave?
Sure. So let's muddy the waters even more.
Yeah.
So in addition to a variety of shockwave devices out on the market, many of which have been studied in erectile dysfunction, now you're talking about different treatment protocols in different patient populations.
Right.
So how can I make this even more confusing? So you have energy density, right? How powerful the shockwave is, how many shocks you're delivering per minute per second.
Right.
All right. How many shocks in a given session, how frequently you're going to have these sessions. Is it daily, weekly, monthly? Do I require maintenance therapy?
Yeah, there's no real standard.
And there is no standard. The second part is now we're talking about patient population. So, you know, erectile dysfunction has a whole spectrum. We have the guys who having, you know, occasionally requiring a Viagra Cialis, to people who require injections, to people who don't get anything, and no matter what you put, no matter what medication we use, they don't get an erection. So this shockwave has to be tested with different protocols and different patient populations. So trying to summarize what's out there, we believe that shockwave probably works the best in men who have mild to moderate erectile dysfunction. And the way we measure that is with what's called an IIEF score. It's a survey. But just to give you a practical idea, like, who am I on this spectrum? If you're the guy that needs Viagra occasionally, or maybe you're taking daily Cialis and you're having reasonable results, you're probably a good candidate for shockwave. The patient who's post-prostatectomy, hasn't seen an erection in 5 years, no matter what they've done, injections, vacuum device, that's probably not who's going to benefit. But the truth is,
we really don't know.
But at least the early data, or I should say the majority of the data, looks like it's in the mild to moderate erectile dysfunction are the people who benefit.
So our listeners should just listen. If you're interested in shockwave, just listen to this last like 20, 30 seconds, because that, I think he does, you know, Dr. Mastin did a beautiful job of really kind of summarizing what we kind of know at this moment and what our recommendations is. But I'm going to go off of that, all right? And I'm going to ask you, you know, as an attendee, as a practitioner, how do you use shockwave in practice?
So at least at our institution, we only offer shockwave as research protocol. And, you know, the Sexual Medicine Society of North America, the conference we're currently attending, you know, that is their standpoint right now. It is not guideline approved. It should be only done on a research protocol, or if not, patients shouldn't be charged really anything more than a, quote, nominal amount of money. So that's where we stand. We're currently only research protocol.
And that's academic standpoint, research. We understand that practically. We know that it's out there.
It's out there. And patients are going to look for it.
And patients are going to look for it. So, you know, I think everything that you said is very important, because when patients have to have expectations, especially if they're paying out of pocket. And I think, you know, to summarize pretty much what you said is, first off, you got to make sure it's the right device. Second off, you know, you got to see if you're a good candidate, right? Mm-hmm. And that is probably just as important, because who cares if you have the right device, but if you're setting your expectations for something that it can't do or will never be able to do, it's really not fair to you, and you know, you shouldn't be doing that, and you shouldn't be spending your money. We don't have the best data out there, but we do have some data that does show, you know, for me, the way I think about it is, and I don't provide it as right now where I am, but I think if you're someone out there and you just don't want to take Viagra anymore occasionally, maybe that's probably the guy who would benefit the most from it. But once again, you know, there's still a lot of research that needs to be done.
Yeah, you know, as disclosure, I do offer it at my practice. And, you know, I think, you know, that's everything I always tell a patient. I'm like, look, I'm going to hand you literally the evidence. And you can go out there, and there's probably a lot of clinics that you go out there and that you could go and get this treatment. Yeah. But I'm telling you, this is the evidence that we have here. And as long as you have an understanding of where we stand, it's something that I'm willing to offer. And that's just kind of standpoint. But I've also been privileged to be able to work under the guidance of, you know, legends in this restorative therapy field, Dr. Masterson and Dr. Ramasamy. And so I kind of bring that to the table.
Yeah.
And I will say, so, and we haven't talked about it, so the flip side. What are the side effects associated with shockwave? There's actually almost none.
That's a great point.
So,
yeah.
as far as the risk benefit ratio to, is this going to cause me any benefit in my erectile function and what are my risks? The risks are pretty minimal. And I would actually argue
that's
the risk is to your wallet.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're somebody,
that's the risk. Yeah, that's what it is.
Like, I would not, you know, bet your marriage on shockwave therapy, but if you have the money to spend and it doesn't seem like you're being charged too much and it's affordable, I would say it's maybe worth a try, but just have your expectations set appropriately.
Beautiful.
I totally agree. And so, I mean, any other statements on shockwave before we move on to another restorative therapy comment? Any thoughts, Tommy? Or Dr. Masterson, sorry.
I think we've covered most of what I had prepared to say.
Kevin, any other thoughts on it?
No, man.
All right, so let's move on to something else. So, you know, Kobe Bean, he really seemed to popularize the use of, you know, platelet-rich plasma for his knees,
right?
And now a lot of clinics are offering this as a restorative therapy for your penis. Now, it's kind of interesting for me because, like, your knee, when I think about your knee, it's a called closed place.
Right.
It's something that you can keep a medicine. And when you think about your penis, it's literally the opposite of that, because the whole point of how you get an erection is blood is flowing in and out. So it's very hard for me to have this idea of injecting something and keeping it there where it's not going to, it's going to stay in your penis. So can you give us a little comments on PRP for your penis? Because I actually saw a couple patients already who had gotten it, and we'll go into it, but I want to hear what you think, thoughts.
So platelet-rich plasma, what is it? So in your blood, you have these tiny cells called platelets, and they are responsible for wound healing, blood clotting. In the instance of like what you're talking about, Kobe Bryant, closed space, you're using it for tendons, you know, those are considered fairly avascular locations.
Did I say and Kobe Bean?
Yeah, it is Kobe Bean.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry.
No.
Anyway, when talking about back to platelet-rich plasma, so when you're talking about what platelets do, you know, they go to an area of injury, they release growth factors and cytokines like we were discussing earlier, that then recruit in other cells and other parts of your sort of innate wound healing mechanisms to fix the area. I mean, if you think about when you cut yourself and you form a scab, that's what's happening there. So what we're doing with platelet-rich plasma is we're taking a patient's whole blood, we put it into a centrifuge. That centrifuge separates out layers, and we're taking out that platelet-rich layer, hence platelet-rich plasma. We're then injecting it into the area of injury, which in erectile dysfunction, we believe is within the penis. So for patients who at least meet our clinical trials criteria, you know, we're taking almost 120 mLs of blood to create about 5 mLs of platelet-rich plasma. We're then injecting this into the corporas, which are the cylinders within your penis that fill with blood during a normal erection. And we're actually putting a tourniquet, something to hold the PRP
to keep it in
the penis for about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Yeah. I think we forgot to mention that you are currently doing a lot of the research on this. So it's just important to just
give
a
background. This is the thought leader
right now. Yeah, yeah. Really, he's doing a lot of research on this, and that's why we're having him on.
Sorry, yeah, it's amazing when you say that out loud. But yes, we're doing the only study in the United States, at least it's underway. Unfortunately, we will be wrapping up probably within the next 3 months. But at least to date, you know, this all came out of animal studies initially. And even before the animal studies, I think, were finished publication, clinics were offering PRP. Last year, there were two studies, I believe it was out of Turkey, and I think the other one was Greece, where they actually did look at PRP in human trials. In the one study, they were looking specifically at diabetic men with, again, moderate to mild erectile dysfunction. And this was an open label trial, and they did show some benefit. Mm-hmm. The second trial was a randomized placebo controlled trial looking at two injections, I believe it was 30 days apart, compared to placebo. And they did have improvement in IIEF compared to placebo. So at least early studies kind of signaled that there may
How
be some benefit.
How far out?
I think these were out to 6 months.
Right. Yes.
So in our trial, we're doing a similar protocol. One of the issues, and you're going to hear this just like with shockwave, standardization. So you know, Kevin's platelets might be different than Justin's, which might be different than mine. When we separate them out, we really don't know the counts, the quality, how much we're getting. So at least in our trial, instead of using just sort of a simple centrifuge, we're using a centrifuge that actually has an optical sensor to sort of standardize the product that we're creating. So you heard me say earlier, we're taking 120 mLs. Some places may be taking as little as 30 to make about 5 mLs of PRP. So we believe that the product that we're making is more standardized, more concentrated. So we're hoping that will you know, reduce some of the variability, but also give us a greater effect.
I think you guys are addressing, like, one of the big things that was the biggest critique of looking at PRP was that there was just variability across all machines, patients, just in you know, in particular, what they were actually receiving. But I want to go off of that a little bit. You know, we've been talking a lot about clinical trials, and I think that's really important that, you know, listeners understand that there are clinical trials out there that are available to look at certain of these products that are being used in a more experimental way. So Dr. Masterson, could you just kind of go over, like, you know, how can patients really find out about clinical trials, or like where to look?
It's a great point. It's a good question.
Sure. So the easiest way is to actually go to clinicaltrials.gov, and you can search your condition or intervention that you're interested in participating in. And it will give you a list of trials, and on there it'll tell you which are open, which are closed, which are still accruing, which are not. Something I do want to mention is I feel like in movies and television, we see that clinical trial patients, you know, seem to be, you know, reimbursed for their time and for their efforts. And this is actually not always true. In fact, most of these studies are very, I wouldn't say poorly funded, but they don't have the kind of funding to say fly someone from California to Miami to participate in a trial like this. So often you may be limited to what's happening locally, but at least clinicaltrials.gov is a good place to start, and not just for erectile dysfunction, but really for any condition that you have that maybe, you know, conventional treatments or standard of care treatments may not be sufficient. That's a good place to look.
So I think with the PRP, I mean, it's very interesting to get back into it. What right now? Where we are right now on this day in 2022, your study hasn't come out. The results have not come out. You know, hopefully we'll have that within the next year, and it's going to be a big deal, obviously. What are you recommending to our listeners to do when they go to a place that offers PRP? Is it something they, because, you know, we talked about it for shockwave, and the difference is, I think shockwave, there is less risk, right? We're not taking potential things out, we're not stabbing you with a needle. I mean, what are the risks of it, and like, what are things to consider for the, like, people out there who are going to their community looking for PRP right now?
Sure. So shockwave, as we discussed, is fairly low risk. It's something external being applied to the body. There's no incisions, nothing like that. With PRP, we are talking about at least phlebotomy, so there can be complications of that. You know, hematomas, you know, dare I say you could get the phlebitis or some sort of infection. I think it's
very low risk.
And when it's come towards the actual injections of the penis, like, we as urologists are fairly comfortable injecting the penis with substances.
Right.
You know, whether it's whether it be phenylephrine to take down a priapism.
Pretty quick to do it.
Or Trimix to get an
erection. Yeah. You know, even intraoperatively, we will inject lidocaine into the penis. We're very comfortable with it, and it's a fairly safe procedure. But again, it can cause hematoma discomfort. We do not have the results of the clinical aspect as far as improvements in erectile dysfunction, but we do constantly monitor for side effects. And I can tell you that the side effects that we've seen are minimal. We've had one hematoma in the placebo and treatment arm. Why do I say that? Because our treatments are labeled A or B. There was one hematoma in A, one hematoma in B. So they,
You
don't know, but that's basically means that it's injection technique and not the substance being injected. But as far as, like, if a patient's trying to look for it, the clinical data right now is very loose. The second thing, and we haven't addressed this, is who's injecting me?
That's a great point.
That's good.
Yeah. Right? And circle back to what we said about men's health clinics. UCLA, our friend Sriram published this.
Yes.
Actually, they called up quote, men's health clinics offering some of these restorative therapies, and just asked, you know, what's the credential of the person treating me? Less than 25%, I think, were urologists.
Yeah.
And that's a startling number.
Yeah, I mean, it ranged from, you know, nurses who are being supervised by somebody, some location, third party elsewhere,
yeah,
you know, to, you know, anesthesiologists, cardiologists, orthopedists. So people
there was
who,
like a dentist, even,
yeah,
like, you
I
know,
mean,
nothing against dentists.
No, but like, you know, stay in your lane.
100%.
Right. And you may, you know, you as listeners may be thinking, you know, that can't be, that's crazy. You know, how is that possible? Well, because go back to what we said, none of this is really FDA regulated. You know, the devices are regulated, the treatments are not. So there really isn't any governing body saying, you know, to your dentist or your hairdresser, like, why are they giving this injection? Why are they not? No one's regulating it. So again, it's one of these, unfortunately, you have to be an informed consumer, because in these instances, there's not really a government body looking out for you.
And I think also for our listeners to kind of know, like, think about, you know, who's injecting you, and if an issue was to occur, who would probably have to take care of it? And I think that's one of the things you got to consider. And we're the ones who take care of a lot of things that happen to the penis, you know. And in certain cases, even though the data is showing that's pretty minimal, not much to consider. But once all the data comes out, if something was to show that there was something, it's the urologist who are going to handle it. It's not going to be the person who probably injected you, because they don't know what to do. So.
No, it's true. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I'll just say something one smarter than myself when trying to describe PRP. PRP is used now for orthopedics, for plantar fasciitis, tendonitis. It's used in dermatology.
Hair loss.
It's used as lip filler.
Yeah.
Lip filler? I didn't know that one.
Yeah, yeah. So as he said, you know, we have a cure that's looking for a disease.
Ah, I like it.
Who said that?
Anonymous.
But it's a great point. So, yeah. You know, and that's kind of a great message here, right? Because the bottom line is, if you want it, you're going to find someone who's going to do it for you. But that doesn't mean it's the right thing.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, availability doesn't mean practically it's going to help you. But, you know, if there's an opportunity to be made money out there, someone's probably going to be offering it. You just have to understand who you're going to, why you're going there, and ask, is this the right thing for me? Is this worth, you know, the risk? Because, you know, we're at SMSNA. A lot of people do some really weird stuff to their penises, right? Like, I was at that talk, were you at the talk yesterday, where we had a plastic surgeon give a talk about all the things that he's had to correct,
yeah,
because of things that people inject into their penis. Obviously, PRP is a much lower risk, as you said, but it's kind of just the general idea of, you know, you value your penis enough to think about doing something to treat your erections. Yep. Just be smart about it. There's a lot of ways that you can mess up your penis, and then you wish it was already the way it was before.
The regret.
I mean, that's true. Oftentimes, the things that people do, you can't go back.
Yeah. Right.
It's a permanent decision.
Yeah, and I think, so we talked about PRP and we talked about shockwave, but with regards to ED, I just want you to have a quick summary on its applicability for Peyronie's disease on both of these. Now,
Curved penises,
Peyronie's disease. Peyronie's disease is really becoming, it's more common than the original data said. The original data said, right, 12% of the population. We know it's much higher than that.
Yeah, one of the drug companies has done a lot of direct-to-consumer marketing, and they also did a disease awareness campaign. And as a result of that, certainly more people, yeah, are showing up. I think as we age, we start to just accept things as the normal aging process.
That may not be it.
And this is not one of those conditions.
Yeah.
Is it more common as we age? Absolutely. But should it prevent you from having, you know, sex as part of your life? No. I mean, there are options available. So if it's something important to you, you know, you should know what options are available.
Now, when it comes to Peyronie's disease and treatment, you know, obviously there's a lot of things we offer now. We offer Xiaflex collagenase injections, which are directly into your penis. We offer, you know, surgeries, plications, penile implants, things like that, you know, grafting. There is, you know, a lot of movement towards shockwave. There's considerations for PRP in this realm as well. What is the data show on this kind of stuff for Peyronie's?
Sure. So Peyronie's is curved penis. And this is not somebody who's had a curved penis their entire life. This is someone who's developed a curved penis later on, usually as a result of a traumatic event. There's scar tissue that develops in the stretchy part of the penis. If you think of your penis as sort of like a tube balloon.
Yeah. The clown balloon.
Yep.
That's
yep.
The one where
imagine putting a piece of tape on one side of it and inflating it. Where that tape is, it doesn't expand and it causes the curvature. So people have looked at shockwave to say, hey, if it breaks up stone, can it break up
plaque.
The collagen? Yeah. Well, the answer is no. It doesn't, it really doesn't break it up. It did soften the plaques, you know, it maybe even shrank them, but it didn't actually improve curvature. The only thing that seemed to improve was the pain associated with erection. And whether that was truly a result of the shockwave or just
placebo,
you know, or the natural history of Peyronie's disease, because most people...
The pain goes away.
Most people have pain go away. So shockwave isn't really considered a treatment, in air quotes, of Peyronie's disease.
I think it's very, very important that what you said, because when you think about it in terms of stones, shockwave breaking stones, you in a natural way, you're like, of course this will work for Peyronie's, but it doesn't. And I think that has to apply to a lot of the things in life that we see, or a lot of studies that, you know, where we have people interpreting data based off of mice, based off of other things, where intuitively it may make sense, but it sometimes doesn't. We're more complex than we give ourselves credit for. So I think it's a really important point where just because it works on something else doesn't mean that it's going to work on another thing. It's once again, we have that, you know, treatment that we're looking to find, or wait, did I say it wrong? We have a cure that we're going to find a treatment for? Did I screw that up?
No, we have a cure. Cure and treatment are the same thing. So
yes,
we have
right.
a cure that's looking
for
a disease.
Ah, there we go.
But on that note, what I was, you know, it's still important. These animal mice studies, there's just some things you can't do in a, you know, on a large scale basis across the human population.
It's a great point.
So I think it's the animal studies are very important. It gives us an idea into the mechanisms, the biology of everything. But it's really the clinical trials, and so I think, you know, Dr. Masterson can kind of talk about that. You know, at University of Miami, not just limiting themselves to the mice studies. You guys are doing something with PRP and Peyronie's too, correct?
So we are, and Kevin here is also involved in that when he was a fellow with us. So we are also looking at PRP as a treatment for Peyronie's disease. And here the mechanism is probably a little bit murkier compared to why it may work in erectile dysfunction. So with Peyronie's disease, you have this collagen deposition. It's a balance between the, you know, in your body, you're constantly turning things over. You know, bone, GI tract, all of those things. There are what are called metalloproteinases and fibroblasts.
Big words.
Yep. What they are, they're just cells that they're cells that create and destroy. So we think that there's some kind of mismatch happening where there's more deposition of collagen than there is reabsorption.
Yeah.
With the PRP, we are hoping that by, again, putting these growth factors into this area of scarring, that it may break up the scar. But who knows? It may even make it worse. We don't know. So we are also doing a trial. The design's a little bit different. So instead of it being blinded, placebo-controlled, what's happening is patients are going to be receive treatment, and then they're going to switch. But they won't know if the switch was from treatment to placebo or placebo to treatment. And we as the researchers actually won't know until the end.
Right.
But, you know, our data still is maturing. We haven't really done any sort of interim analysis other than for safety. And again, it appears about as safe as any other injection into a Peyronie's plaque. But we don't know yet what the results will be.
It's really interesting, and it's important work, and it's very cool. And I think the important thing you guys hear is, you know, you hear for doctors when you're talking about the gold standard of research and clinical research, you hear the words randomized clinical trial. That it's very difficult to do, and the way that they're doing it in Miami is very impressive, and kudos to Dr. Masterson for doing that. But currently, the data is still out. The bottom line is there's no definitive data on whether people should be taking PRP for Peyronie's disease. Shockwave, the guidelines really say for only pain is where we're at. Peyronie's, unfortunately, is not the curvature is not improved by shockwave. So that's the summary there. Let's get into the one final regenerative therapy, which I think is maybe the sexiest out of all of them. We're talking about
sounds the coolest.
Yeah, I mean stem cells.
Stem cells.
Right. Like I mean
they gotta fix it, right?
I mean, so like tell us about stem cells. What the hell stem cells are we talking about here? Where are we harvesting the stem cells from, and how are we using them for ED?
Sure. So we'll take a step back to sort of the beginning. What is a stem cell? A stem cell is what is called pluripotent. And what that means is it can develop into many different things. So if you, we'll use the analogy again, you cut your hand, you form a scab, it forms skin, it forms muscle, it forms blood. It basically replaces what was already there. Stem cells in their earliest stage can actually form into anything, bone, muscle, nerve tissue, and so forth. In stem cell therapy, what we're hoping is that we're going to take those stem cells, place them in an area of damage, that they're going to receive whatever signals from the surrounding tissues to then develop into that tissue. And we, again, with erectile dysfunction, same process, we think that if we put it into the penis where it's damaged, that it's going to create new, healthy penile tissue.
Now, has anyone...
What's the data on this?
Yeah.
So unlike those first two, shockwave and platelet-rich plasma, that exists in this somewhat gray zone, there's a bit more regulation when it comes to stem cell therapy.
Right.
And I don't quote me, but I believe I looked this up. I think there's only ever been about 15 patients in the United States who've ever been involved in an approved clinical trial looking at erectile dysfunction. So meaning directly being treated with stem cell therapy for erectile dysfunction. And at that point, I think the results are fairly mixed. Stem cells are under study for other things like cardiovascular disease, for strokes, things like that, and they've been extrapolating data from those studies to erectile function, but there's not great data because of this regulation.
Now, Kevin, I don't know if you guys know, is this being aggressively offered out in the community? Are you guys aware, or have you seen it?
Let me take, we'll take a step back. So you did ask this. Where do stem cells come from? Well, there's different ways you can get them.
That's important, right.
So you can get stem cells from fat tissue, you can get stem cells from blood, and you can get stem cells from bone marrow.
Right.
Now, if all you're doing is what we talked about with the platelet-rich plasma, which is just centrifuging and separating, you can use them in the same setting and you don't fall under regulation. If you have to manipulate them in any way, to grow them, expand them, add any sort of reagents to separate them out, now you've moved from just sort of like this unregulated, I'm injecting, you know, the thing I took from you back into you, to now you're actually sort of creating a drug, and this is where the FDA steps
in. Ah, that makes sense.
And this is why it is so much harder to do stem cell treatments. In addition, stem cells, as we discussed, they're pluripotent. How do you know that they're going to develop into the thing that you want? How do you know that you're not going to develop them into an unintended cancer? So that's where some of the scare around stem cells comes from.
Yeah, so
on that note, because I wanted to comment on that, so what's offered out there right now, I think, is mainly these SVF, right, stromal vascular fraction, because these ones you can get from lipo and process it in the same step. Mm-hmm. And I think those ones are more offered, but again, it's a little bit more invasive than just getting your blood drawn, you know?
It is, and these are usually procedures done under sedation to then retrieve the stem cells. And the term you use, stromal vascular fraction, what that is that's that centrifuge part. Is it stem cells? Well, it contains stem cells, but it is not like this pure product the way you have with PRP. It is mixed with other substances, and it may not give you the effect that you want. But again, more research is needed.
So right now, it sounds like we need to do some research before we're doing some stem cell injections I think, you know, the concerns are warranted, like you said. You know, it is, you're putting a stem cell into your penis, like, we don't know. Could it cause cancer? Who knows? I don't know. We don't know. But I think that, you know, at this point, I think it's safe to say we should probably hold off on injecting stem cells into our penis.
Yeah, at least, you know, I will tell you, and this is where my ignorance is, because we don't have a research protocol for this, and we haven't really aggressively pursued it yet. So there's nuance to it that I am very much unaware of.
I think most urologists are probably unaware of those nuances. You know,
we only have the literature that's available to us, and it's, you know, it's hard.
I mean, I think in the next few years, hopefully someone's going to be looking into it. But like you said, it is very, very complicated. It's not straightforward. The process, the protocols, the appropriate patient, and it's very interesting because all those questions for designing a protocol are the exact kind of questions that patients should also be asking, right? You know, it's like, what's the protocol for this? Like, what am I taking here? How are they doing it? What are they giving me? And then, am I actually a good candidate? Forget the study. Am I actually just a good candidate for this intervention? And what are the chances that it could help me? What are the chances it can hurt me? And these are all things that we assess in a study that you should actually be asking yourself before you undergo any process to your penis.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, unlike pharmaceuticals, where I can say, here's a Viagra, 50 milligrams, 100 milligrams, and I know what I'm giving you. I also know, you know, who I'm supposed to be giving it to. We don't have that sort of granularity with these restorative therapies. There's just right now too much variability to know how much of any one of those products I should give you. And that's one benefit to a pharmaceutical. We have standardized treatments at standardized dosages. With shockwave, PRP, stem cell, we don't really have that.
No, and the other thing that I think is important, though, that our listeners understand is that, you know, you guys are literally the only ones in the country doing this kind of research right now. Like, it's a big deal. And, you know, Kevin's been involved in it, obviously, and you guys are very knowledgeable. And the thing is, we're still saying we don't really know, right? And anyone who comes out and says definitively, we know shockwave is going to 100% help you, or someone's going to say PRP injecting in your penis is 100% going to help you, you know, there's something to think about there. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think there's a, well, first off, I think there's a, you got to distinct between someone who's coming at you with confidence or someone that's being very like guarantee, you know, trying to guarantee something.
It's
in medicine,
point.
There's nothing, you should probably go the other way if someone's coming at you and saying, I guarantee you this, you know,
right.
There's no such thing in medicine. But you know, you can have confidence, that's fine. But yeah, I agree. In this restorative therapy area, there's no guarantees. We really don't know the full message. We can't offer it as we do Viagra or Cialis because we know exactly how those mechanisms and which patients these will work best in. So I agree. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done in all of these elements.
And that's the problem. Like, I think people are listening and they may be actually frustrated with that answer, right? Because you are spending a lot of money potentially to do these things. And we're not saying it's a bad thing necessarily, but I think the most important thing that we're trying to get here is setting expectations, right? Like, if you have an expectation that's in line, you know, your doctor sets an expectation, you have an expectation that it may work, it may not work, you go through the risks. It's a reasonable thing, but to go in thinking that this is going to be the cure-all for you, it's really not fair. We don't have the data to say that, at least. Is that, you guys agree?
I agree. You know, this stuff is really quality of life. You know, erectile dysfunction is not going to kill you. So you want to be happy with whatever outcome. And truly, happiness is the difference between your expectations and reality. And when those two things are aligned, I think you'll appreciate the treatments more.
And this is the other thing. Restorative therapies are very cool. And it's a great idea because, you know, everyone wants to get themselves back in many ways. But at the end of the day, if you're unsure and you don't want to spend the cash to do this stuff, we have a million ways to treat your disease. We have a lot of ways we can treat your erectile dysfunction. We know that are data driven, and we also have a lot of ways in which we can, you know, correct your peronies.
I mean, to play devil's advocate.
Please do.
Play devil's advocate, though, is like, you know, these treatment options, which I think is what the push is that they're really just masking the symptoms, right?
Right.
And so I think people, you know, we even see within a lot of our other patients with voiding dysfunction, you don't want to be taking medications all the time. you don't want to constantly feel like you're getting worse and not getting better. And so I can see why, you know, patients out there are trying to seek these kind of therapies. But, you know, the important thing for them to know is that it's a work in progress. It's like we're not just sitting still here and trying to be like, yeah, we'll see if, you know, this works someday. No, there's good research being done by Dr. Masterson to hopefully in some time give you an informed decision that you can make. So,
yeah, no, I hope it doesn't come off like I'm against restorative therapies. Yeah. I think it's very important. And, you know, there is a lot of people and there is value in it. We just need to do the research. And we are having some excellent people running these studies.
Yeah. Now, one thing I haven't said, and I think it is actually important, probably should have even said it earlier, you know, don't anticipate any of these things to work if you haven't fixed your own underlying medical problems.
There you go.
So, you know, if you are a poorly controlled diabetic, you know, the damage to your penis is going to be progressive and getting worse every day, no matter what you do.
Yeah.
Similarly, if your blood pressure is just not under control, you're going to be causing more damage along the way. So you want to get those baseline problems fixed first. And really, even taking a step farther back, just try not to get diabetes. Try not to get
That's the key to
the answer. You're right.
You know, diet, exercise, don't smoke, you know, reduce stress, get a good night's sleep. Try to be in a position where you're very low risk for developing erectile dysfunction to begin with. Modify the things you can.
You know, whatever is good for your heart is good for your penis, you know, and that's really the way that it should be, and you're 100% right. And, you know, having a having just the worst controlled diabetes, we can give you everything in the world. Your penis is just not going to work. It's just not.
I completely agree. But, you know, we could sit here and keep talking about the penis. I think we could probably sit here and talk for the next 24 hours.
It's an awesome topic. It's a very fun topic. And this was really, really informative. Tom, Dr. Masterson, thank you for coming on. Tell us where we can find you online or your practice. Tell us everything. And maybe people want to hear more about that study.
Yeah, for sure. So you can always find me on the University of Miami's website. Quick Google search to University of Miami Urology. Put my name, Tom Masterson. On social media, I'm at Dr. Tom Masterson on Instagram and Twitter. You can always reach me on those.
Awesome. So thanks again to everyone listening. This was a really awesome,
awesome
episode. And we're at Sexual Medicine Conference. This was really cool talking about this topic with you, Dr. Masterson. And as always, please listen to our podcast. You know, you can find us on YouTube. You can listen to on any podcasting platform, Spotify, as well as iTunes. Download, subscribe, give us a review, 5 stars is always appreciated. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, at the Man Up Pod. Kevin, you can also find us on our website. What is that?
It is www.themanuppod.com.
All right. For Kevin and Dr. Masterson, thanks for listening. Until next time.
Stay sexy, Miami.